Welcome back to the podcast. In this episode, we're going to be speaking with Jim Thompson, who's the founder of Benzodiazepine Withdrawal Chicago, that meets once a month at the Schamburg Public Library in Schamburg, Illinois. He's also featured in the Benzo Crisis episode of This Is Life with Lisa Ling. Not only that, every year for World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, you'll see Jim somewhere set up handing out flyers and speaking to people and informing them about benzodiazepines. Now, I want you just to realize that, you know, during our interview, as Jim's getting into his story, there's going to be parts that if you are sensitive, it's going to be a little difficult to hear what happened to him because he was put into a rehab. But just know that he's going to come out of this strong, and he certainly is a go-getter and is out there educating people today. Thank you for listening. Hi, Jim, and welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah, you have been quite an advocate for years now. So can you tell me what led you to be prescribed a benzodiazepine and which one were you prescribed?
Yeah, I was first put on Xanax in 1994. I had turned 30 at the time. I was working in the music retail industry here in Chicago for a local chain. They had gone out of business. So I was taking a new job with a company called Tower Records. And I didn't really have anxiety about it. One of the things that would always happen to me was I would sweat. I suffer from hyperhidrosis. So I could be in any social setting and not even really feeling anxiety, but I would just start sweating. So I had gone to my doctor about this and he said, oh, you know, this would be a great thing to put you on Xanax for that. It would help. At no time, you know, did he say anything about the long-term dangers or give me any informed consent about, you know, what I was going on. I felt like I was in good hands. So I started at, what did I start at? It was 0.25 twice a day. And I was taking that for about 4 weeks, about a month, and started feeling some anxiety. Like I noticed something was different. So I went back to him and his answer was, oh yeah, you probably are having some anxiety now about this new job. And I believe that. So he upped my Xanax. So I started doing 0.50 twice a day. So that was in 94. Mm-hmm. By 1997, I was up to like 2 milligrams a day. By 2000, I was up to probably like 2.5 milligrams. It really got bad in 2013, May of 2013. My father passed away and I was very close to my father. And I obviously had depression going on, you know, after he died. So I was also on Cymbalta. I was on, to backtrack a bit, when I was put on the Xanax, I was also put on Paxil at the time, like 10 milligrams at first, then 20. And then my doctor switched me over to Cymbalta. So
and
I was on
at the same time when the Xanax came, the antidepressant came at the same time or a little later?
At the same time, time. So I went to my doctor. This is in May of 2013. My father had died. At this point, I'm taking, as prescribed, 4 milligrams of Xanax a day. Went to my doctor, told him, you know, how depressed I was, thinking, you know, he's going to up the antidepressant. Okay. And he did up the Cymbalta. He upped it to 90 milligrams from 60. And then he took my Xanax from 4 milligrams. To 8 milligrams.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What's happening to your health during this time? Are you having declining health issues?
Oh, yes. Massive decline of health. Always sick. Just, you know, I have an autoimmune condition that was flaring up. Lots of infections. I remember that. I remember I had lots of infections. I mean, I can think back now and it all makes sense why, because I was on benzos. But yeah, my overall general health was really bad. And relationship wise and with people. I mean, I was irritable, I was hard to get along with, and that was at the 4 milligrams. That was at 4 milligrams. I was having lots of issues, and I didn't know it was the Xanax. I mean, this is a doctor, I had total trust in and always thought had my best interest. I mean, every time I would call the office, oh, we can get you in right away. And, and it was always interesting because I would be in the office and there would always, not always, but most of the time, there would be somebody from a pharmaceutical company there waiting to see one of the different doctors. There were three in the office. But like I said, I felt like someone had my back. And I grew up, I'm 55 right now, and I grew up in that generation where you believe doctors did no wrong. And that's what we were taught by our parents. The doctors knew
Absolutely.
everything. I had trust in them. Things got really bad after I was up to 8 milligrams. The first thing I noticed was, well, first thing that happened was I went to my local Costco to have the prescription filled. I had a paper script for 8 milligrams, and the pharmacist there, who I love him dearly to this day, he pulled me over to the side and he's like, Jim, he's like, I need to talk to you about this. He's like, I really thought 4 milligrams was a lot, but 8, no, he's like, that's not right. And I
Wow.
got, yeah, he did. It
It's
was amazing.
interesting that a pharmacist did it, because I think the pharmacists can be very trustworthy sometimes. They're the ones that tell the truth.
Yeah, they do. They do. And but unfortunately, I was in tolerance. I was thinking my doctor, like, how dare you? My doctor knows what he's doing. And I'm like, well, my company has a mail order pharmacy. I'll just get it from them.
Wow.
And, walked away. And I just, think back now, like, that was a sign. I wish I had listened there, but so I went and I called my doctor. He called in a script to Express Scripts, I think it was, yeah, at the time. And like 2 days later, I get two bottles of 271 milligram Xanax. So 541 milligram capsules show or pills show up at my door like 2 days later. So I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, that's more than eight too, because I'm thinking about 30 days and all that. And I call my doctor and he told me, he's like, well, eight, nine, 10, it's all good.
Oh my gosh.
It's all good.
So when's your aha moment? At what point?
My aha moment? What do you mean by aha moment? Like when I
When
woke up?
you all of a sudden say, I think I am sick from the benzos, like it, because.
I didn't know until later on in my story. So I'm on the 8 milligrams. This is May of 2013. So when I was upped by September the following year, I'm a disaster. I'm just having issues at work. I'm not feeling well. I at this point I can realize I'm intolerant. It was a bad situation, and I was having lots and lots of dark thoughts, lots of, suicidal idealization and ideation. And I, in September, it was September 9th of 2014. I was also, the backtrack a little bit, I was also put on, the same doctor had put me on to help me sleep, mind you, because 8 to 10 Xanax isn't going to help you sleep. He put me on Ambien and also trazodone to help me sleep. Yeah. So September 9th, 2014, I've taken my, 8 Xanax that day, not 10 that day, but I think it was 8 that day. My regular has prescribed, took my Ambien, didn't take my trazodone and yet, but was on the computer and then started blacking out. But I had these thoughts of suicide. I just, this horrible depression, and that had been building up, for the months from when I got increased. I mean, looking back now, I know my suicidal thoughts were coming from taking that drug, from taking that
Absolutely.
Xanax.
Yeah.
I'm going in and out of consciousness, and I'm on the computer, and I'm a big tech person. I'm on Facebook and everything, and then I find myself on a chair, with a belt around my neck.
Wow.
The belt's in the door, and this is about a month after Robin Williams had died, and he had hung himself. And I remember I was dwelling on that afterwards, and here I am on a chair, leaning into this belt. Kicked the chair out, and I fell to the ground. The belt broke. Thank God
Thank
the belt
God, yeah.
broke. Thank
Thank God.
God. And I woke up, and I was like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, no, like that. I was just like, that was so stupid. And then I blacked out again. And the next thing I remember is waking up the next morning in a behavior hospital. In a behavior hospital.
Wow.
Later, I found out that during my blackout, I had gone onto my Facebook and I had written, I'm so sorry, everyone. And I just left it like that. And my friends obviously knew something was up, and they had reached out to each other and had called the paramedics, and the paramedics came to the house. My partner was just getting home at the time. He saw the police come in. I had opened the door for them. I don't remember any of this. And I was taken to the hospital. And like I said, I woke up and I was in a behavior hospital, and I was like, oh shit. Oh
And
shit,
how did they
what have I
treat
done?
you there? Because back then they still wouldn't know about the
Yeah.
drugs.
Oh, it was the most horrific experience of my life. I mean, I've lost both my parents, I've lost close friends. I've never experienced something as upsetting and as terrifying as what happened to me there. I woke up the first day and I saw a counselor about a couple hours later, and they're like, oh, you tried to kill yourself. I said, yeah, I did, but the belt broke. I'm really glad I'm alive. Not knowing, the Xanax, not even thinking about the Xanax. And they're just like, well, you took too much Xanax. And I said, no, I took what I was prescribed that. I was prescribed 8 Xanax. I took 8 Xanax that day. I took an Ambien. And they're just like, well, we're keeping you here, and for 72 hours, and you're going to be seeing a psychiatrist here. And I'm like, okay, and I'm thinking I can get through this in 72 hours. At that point, I knew nothing about withdrawal. I didn't even dawn on me like that the Xanax, was causing all this. So that night I go to get my meds, or that afternoon, I mean, I go to get my meds. They give me my heart blood pressure. They give me my Cymbalta. There's no Xanax. And I'm like, where's my Xanax? And they're like, well, you tried to kill yourself by taking Xanax. And I'm like, no, I'm like, I tried to kill myself by hanging myself. I'm like, and they're like, well, the psychiatrist doesn't want you to have any Xanax. He wants you to get it out of your system.
So he's making you go cold turkey there.
Made me go cold turkey. So that first day, or Wednesday, I'm, starting to sweat. I'm starting to shake. Things aren't sounding right. I see the psychiatrist at night, and he's like, you're addicted to Xanax, and just the word addiction and all this. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do? He's like, well, we're going to get it out of your system. So I'm like, okay. I mean, at that point, it's starting, withdrawal is kicking in, acute withdrawal. And I'm really, once again, putting my trust in these people who I shouldn't. So Tuesday night, I don't sleep. I'm like walking the hallway and I'm sweating. And Wednesday comes around and I'm still up. The psychiatrist doesn't come in that day. Or wait, that was when, I'm sorry, that was Thursday. So Thursday he doesn't come in. So I'm up Thursday. It goes into Friday. So now I've been up, since Wednesday, morning. Here it is Friday. It's 48 hours. You know, I'm sweating, I'm shaking, I'm going through acute withdrawal. And when you're in these places, they it's stigma. They make you feel like you're an addict. I mean, I was, you know, shamed
Yeah.
for taking something that was prescribed to me.
Right. You're a good patient.
Yeah, I was a really good patient. Too good. So Friday comes along, and you have to do these little like groups when you're in these places. And I did a group, and I remember going into the group, and I was very manic. I was just like talking and talking and talking. And I went to get some water, came back into the room for the next session, and bam, it hit me, and I'm on the ground, and I'm looking up, and it's like that, you know, kaleidoscope, you know, that fishbowl look. And I see people over me, and I'm hearing sounds, and I'm trying to communicate, and it's they can't hear me. And I've never been so afraid in my life. I've never been so afraid. The only thing I could relate it to was my mom lived through a brain aneurysm in 86. And at first I thought to myself, am I having a brain aneurysm? Like, is this what happened to my mom? And then, like, it was just horrible. And they take me across, so I'm in the behavior hospital. They take me in the ambulance across the parking lot to the regular hospital. I'm in the ER. And then, bam, I have my second grand mal seizure. I'm in the ER. My partner Ken comes, and I'm trying to communicate with him, and there was nothing I could do. It was just hell. Like somebody had just opened up the doors of hell and pushed me in.
So I have a question, Jim. During these days when they've got you going cold turkey, are they checking your vitals every 15 minutes?
Yeah, they
Well, they
were
are.
checking my vitals all the time. They
Okay.
were. I never thought about that, but they were. And obviously, I was having signs, you know. But yeah, so I'm in the ER, and the second grand mal seizure. I remember they took me and they were doing a CT scan or CT scan on me because when I fell, I broke my ribs, like my. So I had a lot of pain, and I remember the person who was doing the X-rays was talking to me, and I'm, you know, I'm hearing her and I'm trying to talk, but I can't say anything. So they moved me into a room and they told me, and at this point, I'm just out of it. And, you know, it's horrifying. They moved me into a room, private room, and they told me that they were going to do an MRI in the morning. So that was going to be on Saturday. So I'm up all night. At this point, they haven't given me any, you know, any benzo, anything. Saturday comes around. They take me to get the MRI. It's really hard for me to get into the tube because I have, you know, my ribs are broken. And I get into it, and then bam, I have another grand mal seizure within the
Gosh.
tube. Yeah. Three with, I mean, it was, I don't know. It was so horrifying. So horrifying. So when they do the MRI, that next, I think it was Sunday or Monday. Well, the next thing that happened actually was that was Saturday. I see the psychiatrist. He comes in that night into my room, and I just lunged at him. I
Oh,
just
goodness.
lunged at him. It took like five people to keep me off of him.
What did they do to you? Because in a hospital, normally they'd inject you with something to get you off of
I
something.
was actually tied to the bed. I was
Oh.
tied to the bed. They didn't inject me, if anything. They tied me to the bed. And then I was on suicide watch too, because I had somebody in front of me the whole time too, because I was on suicide watch. So, you know, just I felt so violated. I just felt, I didn't know exactly what was going on there, but I knew it wasn't right, you know? I knew what was happening to me wasn't right. It wasn't normal. So I'm in the hospital. They do the MRI. They come back and they have the audacity to say to me, "We think you might be epileptic."
Oh, not what they did to you. Not taking you off cold turkey. Oh.
No, I might be epileptic. So, let's address that. So they put me on a drug for or for seizure medicine. So thank God, at least I got something, so I'm not having more seizures. I was moved back to the behavior hospital, where I was basically shamed and was told I was an addict. I was a Xanax addict. I needed help. And what hit me was they had no idea what to do with me. They're calling me this, but they have no idea. They gave me some gabapentin. "Oh, we're gonna put you on this, and then this other thing, we're gonna put you on, oh, Seroquel." I had never in my life heard of Seroquel until I went to a rehab.
Yeah, I know a lot in the rehabs. That's what they're going to put you on.
I call it the shut up drug,
Yeah.
because at 9 o'clock,
Brain. Yeah.
They give it to patients at 9 o'clock, and they're by 10 o'clock, you're drooling and you're ready for bed. So it's a shut up and go to bed drug. So yeah, they put me on Seroquel there. Got out of there with no plan whatsoever. No plan whatsoever. No
They just let
follow-up.
you.
They let me go. Yeah, they let me go. No, well, the psychiatrist actually told me to come see him. And I didn't know really what was going on, but I knew I wasn't going to see this guy. But I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I'll come see you. Yeah, set up that appointment." But in my heart, I'm like, "No way am I going there."
So here's the sad thing. They think you're suicidal. They've done all this to you, made you worse, and then they just release you on Seroquel. Is that what they let? So what happened to the other meds? What have they done
So
there?
I was released. I was on Seroquel. I was on 300 milligrams of Seroquel. I was on my 90 milligrams of Cymbalta. I was on a lot of gabapentin. They loaded me up with a lot of gabapentin. And he, me, here's me. I'm thinking, wait a minute, it's the Seroquel that's making me feel weird. It was, but I'm going through benzo withdrawal and I have no idea that, what I'm feeling is that. I'm with these professionals. These people should know what they're doing. It's just, it makes me mad. It makes me really mad. And it happens to a lot of people. I mean,
It
my
does.
case isn't rare. I mean, it happens. These are not the places for us at all. These are
Right. And
not.
that's why I think it's good for people to know, here's an example, not that you chose to go to this place. It was technically an accident because you really weren't of right mind on all the Xanax.
No.
And you were having the suicidal thoughts because of the meds. But look what the medical profession then did you even more. So where
Yeah.
does the story then go? Now you're out, you're
So
home, you're on all these
I'm
drugs.
out. And I reached out to a friend of mine because I was in bad shape. I mean, I was home and I had never felt such fear in my life. The sounds were horrible. Walking was hard. So I reached out to a friend of mine who was from the music industry, but then he had become a therapist, and just reached out and I said, "I don't know what's going on." And he's like, "You're in post-acute withdrawal." And I'm like, "What's that? Like, tell me." So he, told me about it, and he didn't really know a lot about Xanax and or benzos at the time. Now he does. But back then he's like, "But you know what? You need to be in a safe place." So he suggested I go to a hospital in downtown Chicago, which I went to. It was the only thing good about that was that I was in a place that was more positive. I was still on the gabapentin, I was still on the Seroquel, but I was in a place, a safe place. Once again, they had no idea what to do with me. This is my second place, and within like 3 weeks. They do the same thing, the hour meetings. What I found interesting was that they would bring 12-step groups in, which I grew up in an alcoholic family, so I was familiar with 12-step groups. My dad worked through AA and turned around his life. At one point, I was an adult children of alcoholics. So I found that interesting. And there was AA, NA, they had a crystal meth. nothing for benzos, but they had that. So I would sit in and learn and listen, and bring up, I felt like Cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch. Like I was like the benzo guy, here, over here, can we talk about benzos? And what got me too was like I would see people coming in who were on opiates and they were being treated with Suboxone, you know what I mean, and stabilized. Then they're leaving. And at the second place, what really, when it hit me, I guess that moment, that aha moment when you're like, oh wow, was when a nurse said to me, she's like, oh, benzodiazepines, that could take years. And my heart just dropped. I was just like, what? Why? Why wasn't I ever told what? Why didn't someone tell me? I stayed away from hard drugs. I mean, growing up, I smoked pot. I did acid as a kid a couple times, but I never did hard drugs, never did heroin, never did meth, never did ecstasy, never, I knew because I knew those things were bad. You know what I mean? I was educated about those.
And
People that
who knew what a
you.
doctor was going to give you was going to be worse?
Exactly. So I, I'm there. They, they're like, okay, I was there for about 2 weeks. Once again, lots of shaming, you're a Xanax addict. Not so much there as the first place. This was better. It gave me tools, this place gave me some tools to start figuring this out. They set me up with an IOP close to my home. And I started going to that. And once again, it was Xanax, you're a Xanax addict. And I'm like, no, I don't really think so. Like, but I'll, I want to feel better. So I'm, oh, and to backtrack a little bit, when I was at the second place, I was getting the wobbly leg syndrome and everything that you get when you're in benzo withdrawal. And I rolled my ankle and actually fractured my ankle while I was in that rehab. And I remember telling them like something's not right here, like dragging my ankle around. And they're like, are you drug seeking? And I'm like, no. I'm like, yes. So they gave me Motrin every 6 hours, every 8 hours, I think it was. I think I got three Motrin a day. So here I am in this second rehab, dragging my ankle around,
But do they know
and
it's broken, or they haven't even x-rayed it?
they hadn't even x-rayed it. They hadn't even x-rayed it. The first thing they thought was I was drug seeking. And I'm like, well, no, I'm not. Something's going on. So anyway, I get out of there. I go to this IOP. This is close to home. My partner's driving me. There's no way I can drive. Okay, no way I can drive. Things that I remember about that time, one of the most distinct things was how music didn't sound right. And that was so scary to me because music has always been part of my life. I mean, I grew up around music. I was in the music industry. This was my love. This is a big emotional thing for me too. Music is very, it can lift you up. It can make you sad. I mean, it's a wonderful thing, but it just sounded like static, just like static. And the TV was static and, conversations just weren't right. So I, was doing that and they're like, well, you need to go to some meetings, like AA meetings and NA meetings. So I'm like, okay. So I started going to those and once again, I didn't fit in, I just didn't, I was that one person on benzos at the
I
AA
can
meeting.
see here in your mind how you end up forming your benzo withdrawal group because of this, because you didn't fit in there. I know myself when I was calling around for help, and here I am in Boston, no help. I even called AANA, my friends, that were younger and had problems, like, well, you need to go there, some of the boys. And I'm like, but I'm a good patient. And I thought, nope, I don't belong in any of these. I didn't do this to myself. And that's how I started the support group. So what happens to us? We want to make changes. So that's, I see why you need, why you did it, how you were treated.
So, I mean, that's where it came out. The idea came out was I did pick up, like I said, I picked up tools in the second rehab and this third one, tools. They were probably, I picked out what I needed to take care of myself. I got out of the, well, the IOP actually had to stop because I went to a orthopedic doctor and he's like, Jim, how are you walking around? Like, you have a fractured like ankle. So I was put in
Wow.
a cast. So here I am in acute withdrawal. This is like
Oh.
in November. I'm in a cast, big cast. I have a little wheeler to get around the house. I'm in acute benzo withdrawal, not knowing what's going on.
I don't know how you
I
did
had
any of this.
Xanax in the house too. I had Xanax in the house, but I was so shamed not to reinstate. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh God, I can't take that. That's why I'm messed up right now because of that. I didn't know what I know now. One night, I just couldn't take it anymore. I mean, I just couldn't take it. And I took 1 milligram and I started feeling better. 1 milligram. And I was like, wow, I'm starting to feel like myself. So I did some research and I found that there was a psychiatrist in the Chicagoland area that would let people taper. So I started going to see him. I was reinstated on 60 milligrams of Valium.
Did
Okay. And this
he
is.
know about the Ashton method, or he preferred a longer acting because you were on a short acting benzo?
He was, I wouldn't say he was benzo wise, he was benzo tolerant. He was, helping other people, which I respected. His motives were good. Later on, I had to leave him because I found, not found, but I saw that he was polydrugging people, and I just couldn't be part of that. And, my journey was taking me elsewhere. But I was,
How did you feel on the when he put you on the 60 milligrams? Did it take everything away? Did you feel
no, oh
no?
no, it
Did it
was
help at
very.
all?
It helped, yeah. Oh, it did help, yes. I mean, it took me out of that really dark hell, and took me to a better place, not the place I wanted to be, but it took me. I found the Valium very fatiguing. Like, I just felt like I had weights all over me. But I did, I did find relief and everything.
And did he adjust any of the other meds at that time, or he left you? Like, what happened to the Seroquel? What happened
Yeah, the
to?
Seroquel, I was at that point 100 milligrams. The Cymbalta, I was still at 90. So we just left that alone. But I started the dry taper of the Valium, and it was hard. I was, so I was off. I was working at this time. I was working in an Apple store here in suburban Chicago. And if anybody's ever been in an Apple store, it's insane. So,
The bright
yeah,
lights.
so.
Because I remember when you were working at Apple, I'd see on Facebook and I'm thinking, I don't know how he's doing it,
I don't know how he did it either. Actually, I know how he did it. I did it with a lot of support from them. It was a really, Apple's an amazing company. They encourage people to share their stories. And when I did return to work, I was only off work from September to January. I was off for 4 months when all this went on, and got back to work in January because I had to support myself. But at that point, I had posted my suicide online. I thought, I'm not going to be shamed by this. I'm going to face this. There's probably other people who are dealing with this. At this point, I'm online. I'm on Benzo Buddies. I'm learning the basics. You know what I mean? And all that, where that education we all go through. And then I'm, having, people on Face. I'm finding some of the Facebook groups, and that's helping so much at that point. So I was honest about it, and over time, they understood it. And later I found out that a lot of people in retail take benzos. A lot of people at Apple were on benzos.
Really?
Oh yeah,
So
it was
because of
amazing.
you, a lot of them must now be educated. Good.
Yeah, they are.
So
And
that's I'm all about being open, because we're not addicts. We were given a very addictive drug. We were good patients, and I always believed in being open, with everything I went through. And you've been so public with it and great. I mean, it's so encouraging for people to see what you
Thank you.
write.
Thank you. You got to break down the stigma and break down the walls, and there's somebody else out there who, I mean, there were so many people inspired me. You inspired me. I found you online, you know, and I was seeing what you were doing. And that, you know, it just kind of wrote, it's like that commercial where you see somebody doing something good and then you do something good. And then it just goes on. That's how our community is. Yeah. And that's,
we're definitely a pay it forward type of, you know, group. So you were dry cutting, and now I know you've gone to liquid.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just ask you, you know, what, you know, how was it when you were dry cutting? Were you using a scale? Were you just, you know, doing it by eye? And then what made you go to liquid?
I was just doing it dry cut by pills, trying, you know, at first I was doing pretty well. I was cutting through, I was getting through there, but then I hit walls. I had major waves, and, you know, I'm trying to work at the time. I'm part-time at this point because there's no way I could work full-time. But I'm part-time, and Apple's a great company. I had health benefits still. So, you know, I'm trying to do my best, and it just got to the point, you know, the past year, I was going really slow. I mean, I have been tapering Valium since 2015. You know, I don't know anybody else who's been going as slow as me. I know other people who have probably, but I mean, probably people have, but I don't know anyone personally who's gone as slow. I'm not saying every,
I mean,
I have to work.
Yeah. And people should never say, oh, well, you know, that's a long time. No, you go at the pace that's right for you, and you have to work, you have to function, you need money. And I think it's also good when people are working. You know, somebody says, should I quit? Well, if you can work, you know, I think keep working. And if you have a great company, like which you, Apple was wonderful to you. So,
yeah, they were. And I did. So, but I recently, went to water titration because I got myself down to 6 milligrams. I, you know, with the pills, you can only do so much. So I tried to go down to 5 doing a dry cut, and it was just horrible. I couldn't do it. So, and there's so many different water titrations out there, you know, it's kind of just adjusting it and finding one you feel comfortable with. I was, you know, lucky that so many people have done videos online that I could watch those and see how people were doing them. At our support group, we've had water titration demos. So it really was just time for me to start this and, you know, finally get off of the Valium.
Speaking of your group, because I know when we've talked before, you know, there's that whole face-to-face, and your group was featured in the Benzo Crisis episode of This Is Life with Lisa Ling. And I think your group has been growing, right, since you did it. So it's good that you said that that lesson, I believe it was Chrissy that gave the lesson on how to do it.
Was she the one that did it? Not Chrissy. Yeah. We had some other, so we actually had like 3 different demos through the group. It wasn't Chrissy. Chrissy's is great though. Chrissy was doing, she's off now. She was doing a liquid Valium taper. So like I said, there's all different types, you know, you kind of figure out what's good for you. What may work for somebody may not work for you.
It's all these different methods, you know? So what forms, one of the things I want to ask you, because you've mentioned different forms that you've used, so you have your, you know, your live support group that you run, you're on the Facebook groups. What other forms of groups or social media do you use, and how helpful has it all been to you?
Well, we just started an Instagram, and that's been going really well. One of the things that I like about the personal groups is, and this is something that I remember from the days when my dad was doing what is called fellowship, when my dad was in AA. I remember being a kid and my dad would go to people's houses and he would sit there and he would talk to them. I didn't know what he was doing at that point. You know what I mean? So we do that at the group. We do a lot of fellowship. We exchange phone numbers. So that way, you know, it's, we keep in touch via text. We keep in touch via our Facebook group. You know, we build it like that. So it's so wonderful because, you know, if I'm having a bad day, I have so many people that I can reach out to, you know, and
it
just
is,
say,
it's
hey,
important. Because for years we were just all online when we started. And I know at this last hearing we just had here in Boston, we had a lot more show up than I thought. And one of the women said, I'm with real people instead of just people on Facebook. And everybody was, you know, we took a group picture and they were all going out to lunch. Yeah, and they were all going out to lunch. I couldn't go because I had to go to the Dana Farber with my husband, and it was like I really wanted to go. You know, can you just go by yourself? But I went with my husband, and there really is something to being with another benzo person. You know, I
Oh, it's
mean,
life
yes,
changing.
yeah, it
It's
is
life
changing.
changing. I remember one person I met. We met at a restaurant. This is great. We met at a restaurant, and they had the lamps that went down low. And she came in, and we hugged and got kind of emotional. Sat down, and the first thing I did was like turn the light bulb.
Yeah, because it
And
bothers
I'm like,
your eyes.
benzo people don't like lights.
Yeah,
You know, it was just things like that. And what's really great about the group is, we have people who come, all the time. We have people who come every once in a while. We always have new people. An average group could be, like 6 to 8 people or 10 or 12. It really doesn't matter how many people. What matters is those connections you make.
How often do you run your group? Because you're in charge right now, but I know you feel like anybody can take over the group for you. How often do you run it? So if anybody
Yeah,
else wanted to
so
do it, how did you go about finding a place and
yeah. Well, for a while, the doctor that I was working with offered some space in a hospital. So we tried doing that, and we didn't get any blowback or anything about that. It didn't feel right. You know what I mean? It felt like, I don't know, it should be separated. It just needed to be separated from medical. And it was kind of cold. The rooms we had were kind of cold. So I reached out to a local library. It's in Schaumburg, Illinois. It's a beautiful library, just amazing. It's where they filmed, and different floors. And I just reached out and I just said, do you have discussion rooms here? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, what do you need? And they're like, you need a library card. I'm like, have one. So what I did was I just started reserving the room once or twice a month. And at first it was just three of us, we formed Meetup on there's a app, and you can also go online. It's meetup.com. So I put it on there. I would advertise, put it on my own Facebook. I would ask benzo groups if it would be okay if I would post it. A lot of it too was, when I was in the chats, you're on Facebook, I mean, and I was looking at profiles, I would try to find people near me and be like, hey, I'm doing this. If you want to connect, we're going to be in Schaumburg this day, this time.
And I even sent somebody, I sent Gail to you because I wanted other
Yes.
good to have recovered people come.
Oh. Gail's amazing. Gail
Yeah.
is amazing.
Oh,
It's
yeah. She's great. I'm going to have her on the podcast because it's important to have somebody that thought they'd never get better. You know, come on.
And it helps so much. And the way that we run the group, it's different from AA, and NA, obviously. We allow crosstalk. I mean, that was one of the things as a benzo person, when somebody says something, you can't not allow crosstalk. Because, it's so rare that we get to meet each other. We want to learn from each other. So, but what we do is we do a little round robin where we introduce ourselves, say where we are in our taper, and then we go into open discussion. Sometimes we'll have a topic. What we normally always, or what we always do is we focus on a new person first. We welcome them to the group. We like to hear their story. I always say that, like, we all should have scorecards. Because, like, how much is that, how much of a benzo were you? You know what I mean? Everybody has that. But it's been so healing for me, to have these people. I'm blessed to have a wonderful support group. It makes me feel good to help other people. And like I said, I think that comes from my, not think, I know that comes from my parents. Like I said, my dad was an AA. My mom was a waitress, so she was always taking care of people. So, as a tribute to them, I carry on.
Yeah, you sure are. So now another thing I want to ask you quickly is you use CBD. So I know on the groups people say, should we do it? Shouldn't we? And I mean, I didn't do it. And I don't know, I think I'm afraid to try it, but I know others that do it. And and they do very well with it. And then, of course, some took too much, or there's all different kinds. So can you tell me a little bit about your experience with it?
Yeah. So back to the music. You know, what was horrifying for me was one of my biggest pleasures was music. Mm-hmm. And I found that using cannabis was bringing that back. It was also calming me down. Mm-hmm. But this is in 2017, and I'm getting it off the street. I don't know what I'm getting, you know, but it was helping me. And I think cannabis is a tool like other tools, like meditation, mindfulness, yoga. You know, it's one of those things that we should look at. It may not be for everybody, but we shouldn't dismiss it.
Right.
So I got my medical cannabis card here in Illinois in September of 2017, and I was exposed to a lot of different products. And most cannabis users are my age or older. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd be amazed. It's not kids looking for it high. It's cancer patients. It's people dealing with epilepsy. It's people, you know, with opiates, opiate withdrawal is an alternative. You know, it's people looking for relief from benzo withdrawal. It's about quality of life. You know, it's about your quality of life. We're going through something horrible. How can we make those times better? You know, and so for me, what's been really been a real benefit is CBD, like a high CBD product with some THC. Mm-hmm. So it's called the entourage effect. What it is where you need a little bit of THC to kick up that CBD. They're both cannabinoids in the cannabis plant, and they're amazing cannabinoids by themselves, but you put them together and they can be superheroes, and you can do them in different ratios. So what I find that's helping me right now is a 4-to-1 ratio. So it's a very high CBD. It's a little gummy that I take, you know, 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. And it helps me. I don't think cannabis is a miracle drug. I don't think there's any miracle drug, you know. I think what we have inside of us is a miracle. But like I said, it's a tool, you know, it's a tool, and it's not for everybody. And, you know, I even changed jobs. So I had left Apple. This basically just fell into my lap. I work in a cannabis call center for a company called PharmaCann here in Chicago. We have dispensaries in 6 different states and growing. And what I do for 8 hours a day, I get incoming calls, people calling the dispensary, people wanting to get cards, people having questions about CBD, you know, just, and I come across so many benzo people, but it's great though. It's great because when it's appropriate, I share my story, you know? And once again, and I have resources, like, you know, I can give them Bic's, you know, website and say, go here. They have an amazing page of resources, you know, and then, you know, here's the Ashton manual. I can do that. And then here, you know, let me talk to you about cannabis and how it'll affect the, you know, help you with this and that. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, it's been really extremely rewarding that I get to do that. I'm very grateful I do that.
Yeah, and like I said, 2 wonderful companies do great jobs, and they've all been wonderful with you. So now the doctor, you sent me a picture of a sign in the doctor's office. Is this the original prescribing doctor or a new doctor?
This is a new doctor. Yeah, this is a doctor I found, obviously after I didn't want to go back to the old one who had put me on the Xanax.
But did you ever tell the old one? Did you ever go to him and say, hey, yeah, look what you did to me. Is he aware of what happened, what he was doing?
No, he's not. He's not.
Yeah.
Be honest with you, there's some issues there that I need to resolve that I'm resolving with my therapist. Yeah. I have an amazing therapist.
Yeah, there's anger. There's a lot of anger.
Yeah, that's it. There's a lot of anger. There's actually not anger. What it is... It's anger, but it's disappointment. Mm-hmm. It's me coming to the point where, you know, I have to say to him, you know, you damaged me.
Right.
You damaged me.
Yeah. Like, I know some have written letters to their doctors. They felt like they had to. So when you're ready, you'll do whatever is going to make you feel better.
Yeah, I'm actually, it was interesting, before the show aired, I was going to write him a letter and have him watch it. Mm-hmm. And it just got really hard for me to do that. I'm working it out. Like I said, one thing I think anybody going through benzo withdrawal should do is find a good therapist. And, you know, that's hard, obviously, to find a good therapist.
Right. But those one that do, it's a gold find.
It is. It really is. It really is. And he's helping me work through some issues. And I will cross that. For right now, though, it's something I will be in my future, but not right now. Right now, my goal is to get off of the Valium. And it's not going to be, you know, I am not going to speed through it. I've been going slow now, so there's no reason to speed through it. It's not a race. But my goals right now are to do that, to grow our group. And then something I've been doing recently since the show aired is talking to other people around the country who want to start their own groups. I was on a call about 2 weeks ago with some people from Spokane, talking to some people in New York City. And it's not hard to start a group. I mean, that is not the hard part. The hard part, and we all know this because we're all agoraphobic.
Right.
It's getting out of the house.
That's why I couldn't do it. That's why I did it online. I was so agoraphobic. So I wanted to. Yeah. I couldn't. I wouldn't have shown up myself. Yeah. So
You know what? There was one meeting I didn't show up. And that was probably one of the best meetings for me personally, because it made me real. Because people still show, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, Jim's here or Jim's not coming. We're not going to come, but they still came. And that's my goal. You know, my goal is to, who knows, I may not be able to come out of the house someday, you know, as I taper. Right. I may have that.
Right.
But I, you know, here's a resource and it's for everybody. So, but yeah, that was really nice that time. And it just went on without me.
Yeah. So one thing I want to talk about, because again, you've done so much and you helped so many people. For the first Benzo Awareness Day, the World Benzo Awareness Day, I saw online that you were in a big place and you had the table and all this stuff.
Yeah,
and
the table.
You had so much information out there, and I know you probably weren't feeling good. So just tell me a little bit about what you did, because are you doing that every year now too?
Variations of it. So that year, I mean, the Wayne Douglas inspired me so much, seeing the stuff he was doing. You know, online, and I just felt such a connection. That was the first year we did it. And there were tools. I mean, I didn't have to write up anything. It was so easy. I just went to the website. I downloaded something. I went to Kinko's, you know, made a bunch of copies. That day, actually, I had an appointment with the doctor who I see now, who has on his door, if you're from a pharmaceutical company, please do not stop in. We will not take samples. We will not pass out pamphlets. We will not put anything on video.
I love that.
You know, and I didn't even know that when I found this doctor. I was just looking for a doctor who, you know, was in the area, took my insurance that I, from a good friend, told me, you know, was a good guy. And I showed up that day and I saw that sign and I took a photo. I was like, you know, this is amazing. This is amazing. And I've been educating him. This past week, I had an appointment on Monday, and I went in, and he had asked me about water titration. You know, I said that word once, and he's like, what? Like most doctors. And I'm like, well, you do this, and you do that. So for my appointment on Monday, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to bring everything in. So I'm like, okay, so here's the bottle. This is one. And, you know, I had the syringes and everything. And, you know, it was really nice because he was paying attention and he's asking me questions and he's like, well, how do you feel? And, you know, it was just very assuring that I'm in a good place and that somebody, you know, hopefully he will take this and the next benzo person who comes in, he'll know that, you know, water titration is something he can do for them. He was benzo tolerant, benzo wise now, and benzo educated. So,
all right, good. Yeah. See, it's educating one at a time. So, you know, before we end, is there anything else you'd want to tell people? Because again, you inspire me because you've been able to work the whole time and even change jobs, and you're out still doing advocacy work. Anything that you would recommend to people?
I would recommend, you know, making those contacts online and trying to meet up in person. You know, it is hard. I know how hard it is, but it's so rewarding when you can meet, even if you just meet one other person in the area, you know, a day trip to meet somebody if you can, because it's empowering. Share your story. Don't be afraid to share your story if you can. Some people can't though. I realize
Yeah,
that, you know, and I'm grateful that I can.
right.
And I feel even more determined to tell my story for the people who can't, because I'm pretty lucky. I mean, considering everything that happened to me,
Right.
you know, I'm still functioning. You know, this journey isn't over for me, but you know, I've been able to do a lot. I've been able to educate people. I've been able to start a group. I'm helping other people start groups. I'm breaking down stigma about benzos. I'm breaking down stigma about cannabis. So as horrible as this has all been, it's making me so strong, and it's making me extremely grateful for my life, you know,
And I'm
for my life and
yeah
what I
yeah
have.
and I'm so grateful for you, and we need more people like you, and I'm just hoping that your story will just encourage others. I really appreciate
Thank
you
you.
being on the show, Jim.
Thank you very
All
much.
right.
It's great to be
All
here.
right. Thank you, Jim. Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.